We want to say thank you. 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 We want to say thanks, Mike Dominic. We want to say thanks, Mike Golston-son. We want to say thanks, Mike Thinos, too. We want to say thanks to all those Michaels. If you want to join the ranks of these heroic Michaels, head over to patreon.com/y'allheard and become a patron today. A patron, a patron, a patron, a patron, a patron, a patron, a patron.
Y'all heard? Okay, 1, 2, 3.
Hey, everybody.
This is Y'all Heard, a podcast where me, Marissa Phillips,
and me, Pete Phillips,
are not related yet again.
And I'd like you to imagine a lighthouse on a forgotten coastline, its beam sweeping across the waves, revealing shipwrecks, hidden coves, and strange creatures just below the surface. Now picture two voices, old friends, standing in that tower with a pot of coffee and 1,000 questions, spinning that light toward the foggy corners of what you thought you knew.
In other words, we tell you things you didn't know you needed to know. Did AI write that?
It did, because I didn't have one ready.
Okay. Also, just so you know, I can't even hear the word lighthouse without thinking of Robert Pattinson masturbating.
Good.
And listener, if you don't know what that means, figure it out.
Don't figure it out. How's it going, Marissa?
Okay, I was very worn out from people at my job, but other than that, did I tell you that in Philadelphia in November, they're going to have a showing of Twilight with an orchestral score being played during it?
Cool.
I'm hoping that that's in my future. That's all I really have to say. I didn't really think about how I am. All I can really think about is that, and, that's sufficient. How are you?
I'm okay. I know I complained to you about my glasses already.
Yeah.
Listener, I got progressive lenses because I may have talked about it on here before, but my eye doctor's like, you need bifocals. And I'm like, for what? He's like, so you can read things when they're close to you. And I'm like, I can read things when they're close to me. He's like, so then a year went by and he was like, you didn't get bifocals yet. And I'm like, yeah, because I don't know what the problem is. And he kind of like treats me like, I'm the doctor. I know what the problem is. So I ordered them and they came in. And I love the frames, but I can't see shit out of the lenses. And
okay.
The frames are awesome because I have a giant head, and it's hard for me to find glasses that I feel are wide enough for my head. So now I have gigantic glasses, and I'm happy with it. These aren't them, by the way.
Okay.
And I keep putting on my old glasses, waiting for a new pair without progressive lenses to come in from China.
Oh, from Zenni Optical?
From, I think they're called size glasses.
Oh, we'll have to talk. Were they cheap? I love getting cheap glasses.
These were, I don't think so. I mean, the ones with just a regular prescription were $80.
Okay.
Oh, no, I use a coupon. Anyway, go ahead.
I used to order from Zenni Optical. But everyone keep being like, no, stop doing that. Don't get them from China or something.
Yeah.
And I was like, fine, I'll get Warby Parker. So Warby Parker was like, good news, your glasses are $150. And I was like, cool. And I bought them. And then I got an email and it's like, your prescription is really high. So for you to not look crazy, we have to add like $100. If you really want to look okay, we'll probably have to charge you $200 more. So I was like, first of all, I'm not fucking paying $200 more. But I was like, fuck you, bitch. Why don't you give me this price up front? So I paid $100 more. But again, that wasn't what they ideally said. Mm-hmm. And it looks like I have Coke bottle glasses. So I'm never leaving this house with glasses on. I cannot afford glasses that look good on me because my prescription is so bad that apparently they just need to pay so much money to make a thin lens that has my prescription.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's cute how you buy them and then after the fact they tell you that.
Yeah, I'm worried they're going to do that with me. But I'll tell you one thing, listener. Do not Google new glasses because every single ad on every website is then going to be Zenni Optical, Warby Parker, Eyeglass USA, like all sorts of weird places. I also burned my hand last week.
Yeah?
Yeah. But I think oh no, it was 2 weeks ago, but I think I'm healed like, for the most
you
part.
You really did real bad?
Yeah.
Oh.
I touched the burner.
You're an idiot.
I am.
It came out uncontrollably.
I was curious, so I just... No, I... And my skin turned brown, and I was like, that doesn't seem right.
Wait, why did you touch the burner?
So... It was a moment where I was really questioning if my brain was working right.
Yeah.
Because I accidentally hit a pan that had chicken in it, and it fell to the ground. And then I reached out to stop it from going to the ground. But by then it was already on the ground, so instead I hit the burner.
What's wrong with you?
Yeah.
Okay. Did you go to the doctor?
Nah.
Okay, cool.
I ran it underwater and did whatever the internet said.
Okay. Let's go to an icebreaker. I don't want to hear about either one of our lives.
I think what I would like to do this episode, if I may, can I defer the icebreaker for mid-show?
That's fine.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Marissa, what I'm going to ask you to not visualize what I'm going to talk about today.
Good luck with that.
Yeah. Did you know, Marissa, that in 2016, an Australian group froze a rabbit's brain to minus 211 degrees Fahrenheit? Then they defrosted it, and everything was in near-perfect condition.
It's cool. No.
While I go through this episode, I'd love it if you could tell me what to call it in the end.
Okay.
A few years later, people did it with a pig brain. Dr. Zovenmir Vercella, a Yale School of Medicine neuroscientist, explained to the New York Times, to perfuse something, don't worry, I'll explain, you have to know how it works. You go to an anatomy class, and that's what you learn, how an organ functions. But there's not a lot of good literature on pig vasculature, and definitely not about how the blood circulates in a pig's brain. We had to figure all that out from scratch. So allow me to oversimplify. To perfuse something means to supply an organ with fluid, which is sometimes like blood or a blood substitute, and circulating it through the blood vessels and other channels, basically making blood flow through an organ.
Mm-hmm.
It took them 40 pig brains to figure out how the vessels and all worked, what parts needed to stay connected and what parts could be disconnected. And they would wake up.
This definitely happened pre-RFK, I'll tell you that.
They would wake up at the crack of dawn and go to a slaughterhouse and collect all the pig brains.
Cool. Lucky them.
Eventually, though, they would pump some goo through the brains, and it would clean out the brain and then provide some juice instead of goo in there to flow through the brain while it was kept at a normal temperature. And when I say normal, I mean like room temperature.
Okay.
Okay, so the result that they were able is that they were able to make the brain work outside of the pig, but not to the level of full consciousness. One science journalist said that the goal wasn't bringing animals magically back to life. It's to expand the window for much-needed human organ transplants. Right okay. now, scientists are using BrainX, which is what they called the system.
Oh, I don't like that. It feels like Elon Musk made it.
But it's Brain, capital E-X.
Oh, okay.
It's
I don't like it either.
So what they can do now is they can keep the brains cellularly active for up to 24 hours, which allows them to test new treatments for brain diseases like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. They hope that this research will eventually lead to better ways to help people suffering from these devastating conditions. Okay.
Okay.
So after doing the experiments on pigs, the scientists are now using donated human brains with the BrainX machine. This is much trickier than working with pig brains, surprised.
Mm-hmm.
Although pigs are apparently the closest to a human brain that isn't a human brain.
Okay.
It brings up also, as you may guess, Marissa, some serious ethical questions. When they experimented on pigs, the researchers were very careful to make sure that the brains didn't show any signs of awareness or consciousness. They would put sedatives in a mix that they pumped through the veins to prevent any electrical activity that might suggest consciousness. Because, you know, if you were a brain in a jar and you woke up and realized that you were a brain in a jar, it could be kind of jarring.
First of all, very nice. Second of all, this is a harder concept for me to wrap my brain around than I realized it would be. I didn't even mean to mention brain again, but no, I guess I have a hard time. I understand it, like, on paper, but yeah. I have a hard time, like, actually, like, conceptualizing, like, something being self-aware, just a brain in and of itself without a soul. I don't know. But is that too spiritual of me or does it have a soul? I don't know.
Well, we're going to talk about some of that today, Marissa.
Okay.
So maybe the episode is, y'all heard about pigs' souls. Vercella has said very clearly that they have no intention of plugging anyone at their point of death. Oh.
What?
They have no intention of plugging anyone at the point of death into the BrainX machine. Instead, their work is more about understanding brain death itself, and they're showing that it might not be as irreversible as we previously believed, which raises the possibility of saving people who are close to death. Great.
Doesn't that also raise the possibility of, like, resurrecting people?
Yeah. And that's going to come up later, too.
I don't love that.
But before that, I want to get to the reason that I started looking all this stuff up. Because it could lead to cures for brain disease, but it could also lead to something even more noble than curing people who are on their deathbed. Art.
You said art?
Yes.
Okay.
From The Guardian. In Australia, a team of artists and scientists have resurrected the U.S. composer Alvin Lucier.
Oh, I don't like this already. I hate it a lot.
And he is part of an art installation called Revivification.
I really hope his family co-signed on this.
In a darkened room, a fractured symphony of rattles, hums, and warbles bounces off the walls like an orchestra tuning up in some parallel universe. But there's not a musician in sight. If you look closely, there's a small fragment of a performer, albeit one without a pulse. In the center of the room, visitors hover around a raised plinth, craning to glimpse the brains beyond the operation.
Aaron, I just called you Aaron. Pete's going to think we know what plinth means.
Yeah, I don't either.
Okay.
It's also behind the operation, not beyond the operation.
Okay.
Under a magnifying lens sits two white blobs, like a tiny pair of jellyfish. That makes you feel better, right, Marissa?
Yeah.
Together, they form a lab-grown, quote-unquote, mini-brain of the U.S. musician Alvin Lucier. composing a posthumous score in real time.
What the fuck? When did this happen?
I mean, it landed in the news within the last couple months.
And nobody cared, I guess.
Hey, it's Australia, right?
Oh, okay. Wait, but it's an Australian composer? For some reason, I thought you said
no, that. He's a U.S. composer, but the exhibit and the people working on it are in Australia.
Okay, that seems weird, but okay.
Well, yeah. I guess it's probably harder to do this kind of shit in America. Like, you'd get arrested.
Okay.
I'm also not 100% convinced that his family was aware of this.
Yes, yeah, that's what I can't. I'm not passing by that. That's the part that I keep needing to know.
Because at the end of the article from The Guardian, they go, when they told Lucier's daughter what they did, she said, "Oh, that sounds like my dad."
What?
So it's almost like she had no idea what was going on. Now, we're not big into composers, right, Marissa?
Speak for yourself.
But Lucier was known as an experimental musician who, in 1965, was the first composer to use brain waves to generate sounds. Basically, he would hook some wires up to a headpiece, put the headpiece on, and then eventually the brain would do the rest, and it would send signals to instruments in the room that were wired to the headpiece.
Okay.
So, the revivification team, I mean, it seems like a great guy to target.
Yeah, I was going to say, this does seem fitting.
They started brainstorming ideas with him back in 2018. Basically, they were kind of like, we want to work with you because of your work in this area. And he had these great, big, lofty goals. But ultimately, in 2020, when he was 89 years old and suffering from Parkinson's, the composer agreed to donate his blood to revivification, and soon after he died.
Just his blood?
Yes.
Okay, can't wait to hear how this turned into more than his blood, right?
Also, I feel like he's 89 years old and he's suffering from Parkinson's, which is a debilitating brain disease, so I kind of wonder, like...
Yeah, shouldn't someone else have had the power of attorney when it comes to, like, that? That, like, maybe he wasn't in his right mind to give that right away?
Yeah. So first what they did is they took his white blood cells and they reprogrammed them into stem cells. I don't know what that means. Then... Okay. They transformed the stem cells.
I don't know if we're smart enough for this.
I know, and I tried to dumb it down in some parts, but some parts I have to admit, I don't know.
Okay, and again, please know that I definitely said us. I'm not saying you. I don't know what the fuck is happening half the time.
So then they transformed the cells somehow into cerebral organoids. Marissa, organoids is a word.
Ooh, I'm just thinking of Professor X and Cerebro. I don't know anything else he said.
So these were clusters of neurons that mimic the human brain. Basically, they use stem cells to build a few brain clusters. Ugh. Yeah. Now I'm going back to the article. Because I want you guys to know that I can write like this, but I don't write like this.
Okay.
Both sculptural and sonic, the installation features 20 large parabolic brass plates, which curve out from the walls like golden satellite dishes. Hidden beneath each plate is a transducer, like a speaker, and a mallet, which respond to neural signals from the mini brain, filling the space with a kind of breathless, disembodied soundtrack.
I bet it is breathless.
Yeah, so I went and looked up this thing that he did in 1965, and I was like, this sounds like shit.
Oh, really?
Also, I mean, it's cool that you...
Like a made-up word. What?
Oh, yeah. It's cool that you can make these instruments make sounds with your mind, with your brain, excuse me. But, like, it doesn't feel like music. It feels like sounds.
I like that. That's fun. Wait, also, I'm sorry. Maybe we're going to get to this, but, like, he... donated his blood, but they basically low-key turned his blood into a brain. I know that's an oversimplification, but yeah. Like, does just because you give someone your blood, does that give them free reign to do whatever they want with your blood?
No, but I think that by 2020, they were meeting with him every 2 weeks.
Okay.
Even over COVID.
Even though his mind was not okay?
Yeah. Okay. He could still remember coming to a Zoom call.
Okay.
But, so they had talked about all these different types of ideas, and they settled on this one.
Okay.
And, yeah, so he was involved, I guess, in what would happen.
Okay, that makes me feel a little better.
The revivification team used custom technology to bring the work to life, which I think is a funny sentence because it's like, no shit, they used custom technology. Yeah.
They used a template.
Lucier's organoids were grown. Oh, okay. That makes sense.
I admire you. If I was, my research had these terms, I would be like, nope. And then I would just like peed out of an episode this week. I don't understand anything I read and I'm about starting over.
Lucier's organoids were grown onto a fine mesh of 64 electrodes developed by a German bioengineer, allowing neural signals to be captured from multiple layers, much like a developing brain. Okay. They then adapted an open source platform to interpret this activity and generate sound, turning the artificial brain into a live responsive performer. Question mark.
Okay.
The question mark is not in the article. That's me.
I don't understand it all, but from what I do understand, I don't like it. I'll say that.
Importantly, according to this article, this is important. Importantly, Lucier's organs don't just produce sound, they also receive it. Microphones in the gallery pick up ambient noise, including human voices and the resonant tones of the plates. And that audio data is converted into electrical signals and then fed back to the brain. The group says, we're very interested to know whether the organoid is going to change or learn over time.
If it does learn, isn't there a huge ethical issue? Shouldn't they be praying it doesn't?
There are, yeah.
This sounds horrible.
However,
my mother told me not to be an organ donor.
However, I would guess that, I would say that right now it's making sounds. But if after making sounds it learned to actually compose music,
they should kill it.
That would be cool. Yeah, and then they can shoot it.
Yeah.
But to talk about ethics, Marissa. Wired magazine hit on that a bit. A big question that looms large as this research continues is whether brain organoids can be conscious. After all, they're made of the same basic material as human brains, neurons, rather than like ones and zeros of AI. Will we see evidence of organoid consciousness? The challenge in identifying whether there is consciousness in an organoid is that we're not really sure how to define consciousness in a fully formed human brain, let alone in a small cluster of cells grown in a lab.
Okay.
The ethical implications of this are obvious. A conscious organoid might consciously suffer and we may never recognize the suffering because it cannot express anything because it doesn't have any means to express it.
The way I feel about what you just told me is that these motherfuckers shouldn't have fucked with this unless they knew how to tell if something has consciousness.
Yes, and that's what the pig brain people came up with. Like, partway through, they were studying, I don't remember what the abbreviation is, but there's a chart, I guess you'd call it, or like a measure of some sort, how doctors in a hospital will measure whether someone is conscious or unconscious, you know?
Yeah.
And the scale is 0 to 100. And they got the pig brain and they measured it with this procedure and they found that it was at 10. And an unconscious person is at 30 or 40. So they saw that it was 10. And I think a lot of people would be like, 10? I mean, shit, that's pretty low. Let's keep going. But these guys were like, stop everything.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, it's capitalism, so.
Wow. I hate this topic maybe more than any topic you have ever shared, but probably there's one I hate more, but I don't ever remember what we talk about after we talk about it. But I'm upset that I didn't know about this until right now, and this seems like a huge ethical issue that we should all be talking about.
I think the other fascinating part of this is that these guys are scientists, and I don't think... How do I say this? Well, there are people that I ran across, and this is not going to surprise you, Marissa. There are people that I ran across who also like study this stuff and have hypotheses and have run tests that vaguely support their hypotheses.
Yeah.
But scientific journals won't publish their findings because they're looking at them and they're like, this is nonsense. Like, this tiny thing that you discovered does not back this gigantic hypothesis that you're making. So, like, you're making too much of a leap. But in the art world, you could shit on a plate and bring it to a gallery and somebody might be like, wow.
Yeah.
And so I feel like they're kind of getting away with this because they're putting it in the realm of art rather than the realm of science.
That's interesting. Yeah. Huh. Okay. Weird.
Could zombies happen, Marissa? That is a fine way to end up where I've brought you to. And ultimately, ultimately the answer is no. But if we ever do have a zombie, we will have the ability to test whether they are sated with fully somewhat synthetic brains.
But I just do need to know, I won't sidetrack us too much, but have you ever seen the movie, is it called Caring for the Undead or something?
That doesn't sound familiar.
Okay, continue.
But it did remind me of some movie situations where like vampires would drink synthetic blood and it wouldn't like be enough, that sort of thing.
You mean like True Blood?
Sure.
Oh, and the movie I meant was Handling the Undead, where one day a bunch of dead people come back to life and like are like, hey, to their loved ones. Anyway, continue.
Okay, so we're coming up on the icebreaker soon. The sun is a terribly silly source, but they identified four ways that people are trying to be quote unquote.
He means the magazine or the publication.
Very not true. Yes. The yes. Star. The sun told me. they identified four ways that people are trying to be resurrected. First, a digital clone. Basically empty. You know what? I'll tell you, Marissa, the icebreaker is going to be, which of these four would you want for yourself or a loved one?
Probably none of them, but continue.
First, a digital clone. Basically, while you're alive, you empty yourself into an AI. You give it, you know, like, say, all your
emails. I thought you take a shit in the AI piece. That wording could have been better, but continue. You like, empty yourself?
Yeah.
Say you, like, you upload your whatever. You empty.
You have a movement into the AI.
Okay.
You basically, you know, you give it access to all of your shit. Again, sorry, all of your stuff.
What's wrong with you?
You can give it access to your stuff. You can have it learn the way that you speak, all that sort of stuff. It'll have your words and your voice. You know, you could tell your favorite stories, and a family will be able to interact with that AI long after you're dead. Though,
no, don't like that at all.
When it comes to stories, I found this to be the most devastating, I guess, part of this this article. What? The CEO of Eternos, which is one of the companies that facilitates this digitization, says that most people only have 25 hours of stories to tell.
What?
That once they sit down and start interacting and feeding the AI with their stories, they only have 25 hours worth of stories. Okay. So you've lived 80 years and you have 25 hours of stories to tell.
God, how
and who the hell knows what happened with the rest of that time?
What in the fuck? Ew.
If you're interested, though, it's $25 to $100 a month, depending on what plan you choose, and a one-time setup fee of $2,000.
Oh, this is a real thing that already exists?
Oh, yeah,
Black
yeah.
Black Mirror much, man. What the fuck?
The second one is holograms. The mechanics are what, you know, of a hologram have been around for a while, you know, like projecting light and shit like that. But if you marry that with the digital clone stuff that we just talked about, then you're getting a little bit closer. So your clone, or I'm sorry, your hologram would be able to interact with people, you know?
Yeah.
So hologram, option number two. Third option is resurrection.
No, I don't like it.
Like I said, though no journals will publish papers on it, and the success of the experiments is nowhere near what we've kind of seen done in movies or something like that, this would involve essentially reanimating your dead body by stimulating nerves with stem cells. I don't know why anybody would really love this option. It's going to be probably at the bottom of my list because you're going to stimulate my stem cells after I die. And if I could be a hologram, I could be like the idealized version of Pete Phillips. But if I go with resurrection, then I'm the near dead version of Pete Phillips.
Like, it just sounds like your pet cemeterying somewhere.
Yeah. So yeah, that leaves us.
Gonna say none. None.
That leaves us with number four, Marissa.
Oh, okay.
Cryonics.
Oh.
So, and we'll talk about cryonics more, but. Icebreaker. Which of these four would you choose?
Wait, I'm sorry. You want me to choose, but you didn't give me specifics about cryonics.
No, I didn't. Well, I'm sorry. Cryogenics, you know, like freezing.
Yeah, but there's
quote-unquote
nothing.
Freezing, and then...
There's no details you think I should have before I answer?
I'll give you this detail. I have it a lot lower. Okay. From someone who is opting to be cryopreserved, okay?
Yeah.
I was fascinated by the idea of possibly being restored to life in the future. It seemed like a form of time travel, she says. Having a small chance of coming back versus no chance at all seemed to be a logical choice.
But, okay, the thing about that, though, is like, so if you really want to experience the future as your best self, you'd have to freeze yourself, like, in your youth.
Yeah.
Like, so we're either asking people to not live their lives fully in the present, or we're going to freeze ourselves and we're not at our best selves. And I don't... Nope. None. My answer is none. I don't like any of it. I don't like death, but...
If I could have a Marissa hologram that would come up around once in a while when I needed some help, and I could be like, hey, Marissa, and then you just shoom, appear, I think that would be kind of fun.
Okay, fine. The way you just presented it, I guess if I had a digital Pete, then when I was having a crisis, I would tell him stuff. Fine, that. But I feel like if I could pick a choice that isn't on it, I would want us all to become vampires in our prime. But
I forgot that one. To be fair, the article did not mention that one.
I don't want us all to become vampires in our prime, but without having to worry about our souls possibly being damned.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my best case scenario. My secondary is fine, a digital version of people I know, but I don't love it.
Yeah. Ultimately, I think, even though this sounds bad, ultimately, I think I would let my loved ones go and try to cope with loss, because you can't hang on to everything forever. And I feel like that's something that you're supposed to learn in life over time. So yeah. That's probably why I wouldn't pick any four of these. But again, if I could pick one and a certain like person, it would definitely be the hologram.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I would spend the whole time going like this with your face. Like, just putting my hand through your face.
Okay, yeah, I get that. That's why I would just want digital, not hologram, so I'm not tempted to do that. I think all of this is very unhealthy. That's all. And I don't mean physically. I mean, I think, like, mentally, it's not good for anyone.
Yeah.
For any of these options.
Culturally, too. It's, you know...
Yeah.
Who are the people who are going to be able to afford this except rich people? And nobody wants rich people to keep living.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, in January of this year, the BBC reported on a German cryonics startup, Tomorrow.bio, offering a chance at a second life for the cost of a sports car. For $200,000, you can be cryogenically preserved. What do you think, $200,000?
That seems more reasonable than I'd expect.
I thought so, too. Yeah.
I would think it would at least be in the millions.
At the perfusion pump, this is the BBC, at the perfusion pump is Emil Kenziora.
Don't worry about it.
Kenziora. Emil Kenziora.
You tried your best.
I'm saying it a few more times so I can have it in the can because I got to say it a few more times.
Okay.
And he is Tomorrow.bio's co-founder. And he's a former cancer researcher who switched careers after finding that progress in curing the disease of cancer was, quote-unquote, way too slow.
What the fuck? So what he switched to, how does that help?
He was a cancer researcher. He found that it was moving too slowly, so he goes, you know what, I want to switch to cryopreservation.
Fuck him.
So that I can, I guess, because I see that going somewhere. I don't know. But that does feel like, I think you're in it for the wrong reason, bud.
Yeah, bitch.
So, tomorrow.bio, I also find this kind of funny that they wrote, that the BBC wrote a whole article about it. So far, they have frozen or cryopreserved 3 or 4 people.
Wow.
five pets.
Oh.
But almost 700 people have signed up. During 2025, they will expand their operations to cover the whole of the U.S.
Wait, what are they covering now?
It's a German startup.
Oh. Yeah. Wait, so it went from being from German to the U.S.?
Yeah, I guess so.
But no other countries?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, like, if you're in Europe, it's probably easier to get, you know, to German. Well, I'll explain how it works.
I guess I'm questioning that because it just feels like all of these things you're telling me are foreign countries kind of using Americans as their guinea pigs.
Uh-huh.
And I don't like that.
Which is, you know, I think that there's every article that I read essentially had this line in it. No one has ever been successfully revived following cryopreservation. And even if they were, the potential result could be coming back to life severely brain damaged.
Yeah, that's what the fuck? That's horrifying.
There is currently no proof that organisms with brain structures as complex as humans can successfully be restored. And this, some people have called this concept preposterous, says Clive Cohen, professor of neuroscience at King's College London.
Did they try to cryogenically freeze pigs first?
Oh, that's kind of, yeah, I mean, I would say what I learned along the way is that they don't just freeze everybody when they cryopreserve them. So the guys with the pig brains, they were cryopreserving brains as well.
Wait, what?
But I don't know if they have cryopreserved a whole pig and then tried to bring it back to life.
Oh.
That's a good question.
Yeah, okay.
I really try to anticipate your questions, Marissa.
Sorry.
So this professor, this neuroscience professor, sees pronouncements that nanotechnology or connectomics, mapping the brain's neurons, will bridge the current gap between theoretical biology and reality as overpromises. So he doesn't think that these things are really going to work out, any of the things that we kind of talked about today.
Okay.
But this is how tomorrow.bio works.
Okay.
Once a patient has signed up with the firm and a doctor confirms that they are within the final days of their life, the company dispatches an ambulance to their location. When they're legally dead, the patient is moved into tomorrow.bio's ambulance, where the cryonics procedure begins on the go. Okay. The startup has been motivated by patients whose hearts have stopped in freezing temperatures and then later been restarted again. So that's kind of like their, I guess, evidence in a way that this could work.
Okay.
One example was Anna Bagenholm, who in 1999 spent 2 hours clinically dead during a ski holiday in Norway, but was later revived.
Okay.
Cool for her.
Yeah.
During the procedure, the bodies are cooled down to sub-zero temperatures and supplied with cryoprotective fluid. Quote, once you go under 0 degrees, you don't have to freeze the body. You want to cryopreserve it. Otherwise, you could have ice crystals everywhere, and the tissue would get destroyed, says Kenziora, whose firm works both in practical and research areas of cryonics. To counteract that, this is stuff I don't know. I don't know why I even concluded this.
Okay.
To counteract that, you replace all the water, everything that could freeze in a body, with a cryoprotective agent. And this solution is primarily made of components of dimethyl sulfoxide and ethylene glycol.
That's fine. None of us are going to retain this specific detail. Just make them enough.
Once you've done that, you cool down with a very specific cooling curve, very fast, to around minus 125 degrees Celsius, or minus 257 degrees Fahrenheit. And then, once you're there, you go very slowly from 257 degrees, minus 270... I'm going to just go with Celsius. Minus 125 degrees Celsius to minus 196 degrees Celsius. So okay. It's kind of like my slow cooker, where if I set it to high, it heats up really fast, but then it maintains that temperature for a long time.
Okay.
At the latter temperature, the patient is transferred into a storage unit in Switzerland, where Kenziora, that's what it was, says you will, quote-unquote, wait it out.
Cool.
The plan, he says, would be that at some point in the future, the medical technology would have advanced enough so that the cancer or whatever led to the patient's death in the first place is curable, and the cryopreservation procedure itself can be reversed.
Now that makes sense, because I was like, why the fuck would you want to be cryogenically frozen when you're sick and about to die, and then you're just going to come back sick and about to die?
Yeah.
But okay, that at least makes it make some sense.
Whether that happens to be 50, 100, or 1,000 years is anyone's guess. In the end, it doesn't really matter, he says. As long as you keep the temperature, you can maintain that state for virtually indefinite time frames.
This just, I don't know, I just don't like this because, like, I just imagine, like, just someone being negligent, like, my loved one's body, like, thawing and it being, like, I just can imagine this going bad really easily.
I would argue that the freedom to make choices for yourself trumps all other potential ethical considerations. Kenziora says, there's a tremendous amount of people who buy their second super yacht who are 85.
Wait, is this a real quote you're telling me?
Yes.
Okay.
There's a tremendous amount of people who buy their second super yacht who are 85 who have, I don't know, 3 years left of life. On that basis, a $200,000 investment into potentially returning to the world looks, he says, like a fair deal.
Kenziore, or whatever the fuck his name is a cunt. And I'm not even adding more detail.
Once you learn that he was like, because there are people around the world who are dedicating their entire lives to trying to cure cancer, and it might not happen in their lifetime. But that doesn't mean you just quit and do something else.
You quit and you take a lot of people's money with giving them the vague promise of being resurrected when someone else did the work to figure out cancer.
Yes, yes.
Fucking idiot. What a selfish little prick.
He says that right now most of his clients are under 60 years old and funding the fees through life insurance, believe it or not.
Huh.
This can be arranged through the firm or independently.
Do we have any idea if he intends to cryogenically freeze himself when he's going to die?
I feel like you have to kind of, like, be a member if you're the president, yeah.
You're fucking better.
For Louise Harrison, 51, whose quote I mentioned earlier, she was signing up driven by curiosity.
okay. You know what? I respect her the most.
Yeah. Which brings me to our dear friend Alex, who called us in 2020 to suggest that we find out a little bit more about something that he describes in a voicemail.
You know, one of the things that I think is just the creepiest ever, gives me chills, is something called the Chatsworth Incident. In the early history of cryonics, there was this, like, TV repairman who wanted to, you know, with people's consent after they died, put them in a vat of liquid nitrogen in the hopes that someday in the future they could get thawed out and, using future therapeutics, be able to heal them of whatever it is that would have caused their death. This is really well documented in an episode of This American Life. The title of the episode is Mistakes Were Made, and I think I'll leave it to them to tell the rest of that story. Okay, thanks for the show, guys. Bye.
Did I mishear? Did he say a TV repairman was doing this?
Yes. So, the Chatsworth scandal refers to a significant failure in the early history of cryonics centered around Robert F., nicknamed Bob.
Okay.
Bob Nelson, the first president of the Cryonic Society of California. So if you follow this man's account, he was passively interested in cryonics, and he went to this meeting of the Cryonic Society of California, and he has no scientific background. He works on TVs. That's his job. And I guess he was so charismatic, or maybe everybody else was too smart to actually, like, volunteer, but he ended up becoming the president of the Cryonic Society of California.
Oh, no.
In the late 60s and the early 70s, Nelson oversaw the cryopreservation of several individuals at the Oakwood Memorial Park Cemetery in Chatsworth, Los Angeles.
No.
Due to inadequate funding, lack of proper maintenance, and insufficient technical expertise, the cryonic storage systems failed, leading to the thawing and decomposition of the preserved bodies.
That is my concern.
And it's basically like he essentially bought, like, a crypt, and he had these, you know, this technology and everything in there. But ultimately, when he saw that it was failing, he just locked the crypt and walked away.
Yep, exactly. Exactly. Because I know that if this shit happens and there's a technical difficulty, the person's not going to fess up. They're just going to keep your loved one's thawed, decomposing body and hide it.
He was eventually convicted of fraud.
Good.
So at least there's that.
And then I hope he was burned at the stake.
Along the way, though, I was, like, I don't know how this is related, but I discovered it, and I thought it was kind of interesting, question mark.
Okay.
You might know this already, listener, but in 2021, The Guardian reported that an Icelandic man who got the world's first double shoulder and arm transplant is recovering well after the operation. It took years to find suitable donors, during which some 50 medical staff in total became involved in the preparations for the operation. Four surgical teams were involved to minimize the transition time between donor and recipient. Good Morning Britain reports that the man is now able to brush his teeth, walk his dog, and give Iceland's president a high five, which I would not do.
Okay.
Now his career is a quote-unquote transformational coach, which is a title that I kind of hate, but he is helping people live their lives after late-in-life disabilities.
Okay, that's cool.
It's kind of related because they did have to preserve those arms and the shoulder while, you know, before it got to him. So it was loosely related, but also, could you imagine, Marissa?
What part?
That you got a dead person's arm?
Yeah, that'd be kind of gnarly, but also romantic. Not like...
No, I'm not jerking myself off.
Yeah, I'm not going to detail. I'm going to leave my statement as I said it.
So, like I said, Marissa, I don't know exactly what to call this episode, but... But that's the end of it.
Oh, yeah, you kind of went a lot of directions. have a consciousness in cryogenics and ethics, and I call it the fuckery of what I said. Fuck the fuckery of, and the three things I said, which I forgot I said already.
Luckily, I have it recorded, Marissa.
Okay, so yep, that's the topic. Yeah, interesting. This is a lot happening.
Yeah, I really wanted to tell you about the guy who's making music. The brain.
I hate that part.
Who's
a
making
lot.
Music. That, and so I had to kind of build the rest around it, which is why I kind of ended up in so many different directions.
Oh, but it worked.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. You're better. Guys, we don't need to pretend. Pete is better at crafting episodes than me. When I find it doesn't work, I just give up.
And he has a lot more free time, too.
Fair enough. yeah, I don't really have any questions. I asked them all during. But, yeah, hate this topic, hate everything in it, and it all upsets me. And now I feel like I do need to watch the movie, The Handling. What is it called again?
Handling the Undead. Oh, right.
It seems like it's a very upsetting movie, which is why I haven't seen it yet. You should watch the trailer. It looks really terrifying.
Oh. Once I see, like, a European name, I'm like, ooh, I don't know if I'm into this.
Okay. Yeah, I think it is a foreign film, yeah. Anyway,
Marissa. Plugs.
What?
Do you have anything you'd like to plug? Anything that you've been enjoying in life lately?
Enjoying in life?
One thing is, Marissa's making some snack videos, and if you're not following our Patreon, then you're probably getting them somewhere else.
No, because nobody who listens to our podcast also follows my TikTok, and I don't put most of them on Instagram or Facebook, so if they're not following our Patreon, they are missing most of my snacks. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So,
I also felt very sad, Marissa, that you couldn't get to hear my my coverage of that Nicolas Cage Western movie.
Wait, I didn't hear it yet. Why can't I?
Because you're not a subscriber anymore.
Oh, I still get the emails, but I didn't try to open the... Oh, I think actually I'm losing all of my access tomorrow.
Oh, okay.
So I'll try and squeeze it in today.
We're also losing Skype today. Tomorrow is the 1st of May. So I got to come up with a plan.
Yeah, I was wondering if we were ever going to address that. But, yeah, no, I wasn't plugging my own snacks. Pete plugged my snacks, which you can see if you follow our Patreon. I did just review Kentucky Fried Chicken Toothpaste, which did almost make me vomit. And other reviewers did not almost vomit, and I think they're lying.
It felt like Marissa's review of Kentucky Fried Chicken Toothpaste was almost like... I don't know exactly what to say, but like, it was like if you gave a child like a cookie and then but it was really made of broccoli. Because it was like, wait, these don't go together. What is this? I've been betrayed.
I like that. I don't think I read that much into my own review, but I appreciate that. I'm going to plug, if you have ever watched any season of the show You on Netflix, and you have not caught up on the last season, please do so immediately. Pete, I forget if you watched You. Did you watch You?
I watched You at the very start when it was on Lifetime.
Oh, and then you stopped?
Then it went to Netflix and I watched the second season. And then in the third season, halfway through, I was like, I'm sick and tired of this asshole.
Yeah, okay. Well...
And his crazy wife.
Oh, well, I mean, spoiler alert, she's not alive anymore.
It was inevitable. He kills everybody he has sex with.
So, I guess
that's the thing. It's like, it's like a deviant version of Groundhog Day. Every season he ends up murdering whoever he's banging.
Well, I will say that was only a spoiler for like a season from like three seasons ago, but I won't spoil the new season. But yeah, the new season and the last season, it's on Netflix now, all the episodes. The series is over. I'm so sad to see it go. Was I satisfied with how it ended? I don't know, but I don't know what I would have been satisfied with anyway. So it ended fine enough. But
I'm going to ask a spoiler alert question, listeners.
Okay. Sure.
Does he get caught?
Yes.
And does he get killed?
No, they just shoot off his dick.
Great.
Yep.
Maybe I will watch it.
Yeah, I really think you should. I thought he was going to be killed, but then it just turned out she shot his dick. Anyway, so, wait, did you plug?
Marissa, yeah. I have been meaning to tell you this. Do you remember, it might have been like 2 or 3 years ago now, that show that was on Fox called Alert Missing Persons Unit?
I mean, like, it sounds familiar. I don't think I've ever seen it.
It's about, you have seen it because I remember we talked about it. It's about a missing persons unit, and the show takes place in Philadelphia, and every episode somebody goes missing, and every episode they have to find that person by the end. And what you and I talked about was how the woman who was like the boss detective, she would always be like, "We're going to bring your baby back." But she would say that about like a 7-year-old, a 40-year-old. Like, she would say it about every single person who got kidnapped. And I just remember joking about that with you. And then I looked online and other people were like, why does she keep calling everybody baby?
That's funny.
But this season, they killed her in the second episode.
Ooh.
And so what I wanted to tell you is that if that was the reason that you weren't watching it, but this seems like the reason you weren't watching is because you forgot it existed.
Yeah, I totally forgot that existed.
That you would be clear now and you'd be able to watch that. But
that's kind of funny. Did she get to say it in the season at least once before getting killed?
I don't think so.
No. Boo! They probably killed her because of that.
The episode where they killed her is so sad because you don't even see her face. You could tell that they used a completely different actress.
Oh, okay. Well, that explains a lot. If you have any topics you'd like us to explore or just have any thoughts, let us know your thoughts on the ethics of what Pete discussed. You can call us at 570-POD-11.
Or you can email us at y'allheardpod@gmail.com, which I checked and still works.
Good, because no one emails us ever, right?
Yeah.
What? Thank you for listening.
As always, thank you for listening.
Yeah. And, I don't know. Whatever I usually say. Stay safe or something. Bye.
Bye.